Yes, so I want to say something before my talk. It's because someone should say something about this. So this is most recent news from this event. This is Chandra data just this month. It's 100 days after the merger. So they see something, strong X-ray flux from this event. And this, what is this? Oh. So this is the actually prediction from radio synchrotron observation at 93 days. And it's beautifully consistent or as predicted, because the radio itself, we knew somehow the spectral index to be minus 0.6. And just from this point all the way to the X-ray is consistent with this Chandra detection. And this is quite simple synchrotron power spectrum. And this is kind of also consistent that we don't expect the cooling frequency to be lower than like 18 Hz, because density is low and the velocity is high. So if it's a major relativistic component, the cooling frequency, after the cooling frequency, it's the spectrum goes a little bit down. So we expect cooling frequency for relativistic case quite high, and mild relativistic also still high. It's above here. So it's kind of consistent with the whole picture of this blast wave interacting with ISM. Do you have some comments on this or some questions? Yes, this is good, very good news. This is good, very good. The nature behaves very well, I mean. So yes, so yeah, I'd like to talk kind of different topics. This is neutron star merger contribution to our process abundance. This is, so Teresa also already told us some basic idea of metal plus stars, and I will try to integrate this metal plus observation and solar abundance to this event. So first of all, I want to point out this neutron star merger and the nuclear synthesis first proposed by Latim and Schramm. This is 1974. And this was black hole and neutron star collisions, but they claim that neutron star decompressed and our process elements are produced. And very surprising thing is this paper was submitted even before the discovery of Hals-Taylor pulsar. So this is a very, very good theoretical work, I think. And a few weeks ago, the Jim Latimer was giving a talk in CCA, and he claimed that this observation seems, this means this gravitational wave observation seems to have solved the long-standing mystery surrounding the origin of the R-cross element. So he's very happy about that, and then I want to discuss here why we think this seems to have solved this problem. So this is a basic summary of what we see, what we learn from this event. So first of all, the ejector mass is 0.4, 0.5, depending on who analyzed it. And lanthanoid mass fraction, this is mass fraction of lanthanoids, is consistent with 0.01. And maybe to explain the blue component, we want to have this kind of low lanthanoid less element. And also the rate is estimated from gravitational wave observation, and which is kind of high. And also the host galaxy property tells us the delay time between the star formation to this merger is about 1 to 10 years, which is long. So some people already noticed that this value, this is called the lanthanoid rich ejector, but it's not really sound lanthanoid rich. The reason is, if you look at just the solar abundance, this is solar abundance in atomic number. So this is actual solar abundance. So if you look at the lanthanoid element is here, it's in the solar, in the sun, it's quite tiny. It's just the mass is 5 × 10⁻⁴ solar mass in the sun. And basically, most of the mass is around the first peak element, and here is quite tiny. And if I integrate from heaviest element to the first peak, so this is a cumulative distribution. For the uranium, we know this is very tiny, like 10⁻¹⁰ solar mass in the sun. And around the lanthanoid and up to the second peak, it's 10 to the minus 7. And up to the first peak, we get a few times 10 to the minus 6. So the R process mass, depending on where from where we call the R process, from here or here, and then you get minus 10 to the minus 7 to 5 times 10, minus 7. And lantern with mass fraction to this total R process element is 0.1. If you take like from here to here, the lantern mass fraction is 10%, which is quite high. And even if I take from here to here, lantern mass fraction is 2.5 or 2%, which is even more than what implied in for this value. So it's because of this. This even sounds not very really lantern rich. And as already shown this figure, that this is the most famous metal poor star. So if we look at the metal poor star, they are supposed to be reflect the abundance pattern of one R process event. It's excellently fitted the solar abundance around here, but if you see here, this first peak element is far below the solar abundance. So this is, one order magnitude. So if you look at this, because the most of the mass is in here, so here, but this abundance matching is up to strontium, which is here. So it's quite uncertain how much R process elements and was produced in the event that produced this abundance pattern. Yes, this is upper limit at this time. Upper limit. This is upper limit. So this is quite interesting. And also we know that if you look at similar kind of event, that there is scatter. It's kind of about factor up to 10. So this is one reason we think this red kilonova is kind of universal, but the blue kilonova is not necessarily associated with the merger because we have some scatters, at least some R process element. R process production has some variation or some other astrophysical event produces this one. But up above second peak, it's quite universal. So it's indicate that a single kind of astrophysical event produces this. So I expect always neutron star merger associated with these elements, but not necessarily for the heavy light element. And light element is basically dominate the total mass. And this is already mentioned. Some of the star shows huge enhancement in the first peak. So because Elliot asked this question, so I just prepared one figure. This is data taken from this paper. These are the distribution of the nearby stars divided by thick galactic disk, thin disk, and halo stars. So if you look at the halo stars, it's quite European mobile age is quite low. But if you look at the thin disk, it's around solar value. So I'm not sure how biased these samples, but at least in the disk, we expect some similar to the solar value. So now we can do this kind of very simple calculation. So how much R plus element we need to explain all the R plus element in the Milky Way. So this exercise first have been done by this paper. It's 30 years ago. So let's take the mass of the galactic disk, which is 6 times 10 to the 10 solar mass. And assuming this 10 to the 6, stars typically have the solar abundance pattern. And as I said, depends on where. So depends on including fast peak or not, you give this total mass in these stars is like 2.3 times 10 to the 4, or if I don't include first peak, it's 5,000 solar mass. And if the ejector mass in each event is like 0.01 solar mass, then I get this 500 to 2,300 per gigaparsec cube per year. This is kind of what LIGO indicate. So, and then we can plot this kind of figure. So this is a Milky Way rate. So how often the R process element event, our process production event occur per million year in the Milky Way, and this is how much our process elements are produced. So what I just say, this exercise gives me this kind of line, which is just the total our process mass in the Milky Way is rate times mass per event times the lifetime of the galaxy. And there is some uncertainty because we don't know, maybe our process event rate used to be high compared to the present day, so there is some uncertainty things. And gravitational wave event, this is a rate, I take just 0.05 solar mass and factor of 2 uncertainty, so this is something the LIGO and this event says. So this is pretty good. I mean, this is just look at this event rate and mass, and compared to the total mass of the R-process element, it looks like quite consistent. And this is when I include all the R-process element, but if I don't include the first peak, then this actually this event provides too much radioactive element. Okay, so let me explain the other measurements. So this is the dwarf galaxies. So you can do the same exercise as a Milky Way for the dwarf galaxy. There's different dwarf galaxy has different abundance, but we have some measurements, so we can do same similar exercise to the Milky Way. And this is a European mass for each dwarf galaxies. So this is a classical dwarf galaxies. And this is a famous one recently discovered. And it's very faint, like the luminosity is just thousand solar luminosity. And other ultra-faint dwarfs don't show any R-process enrichment. So it looks like the R-process mass is proportional to this, the luminosity, so which is consistent. Then we can exercise what event rate and what production mass can be consistent to explain this distribution. And then we can get something like this. So the event rate, R-process event per core collapse supernova is about 0.1%. I mean. So this is interesting, and the mass indicated this exercise, you know, 10 to the minus 2 to 4 times 10 to the minus 2 solar mass. And because these ultra-faint dwarf galaxies have quite small escape velocity, probably maybe 30 kilometers per second, 40 kilometers per second or less, and there must be some effect, some merger occurs outside of the dwarf galaxies. And it's interesting, the binary neutron star must have some center of mass velocity after the second quark collapse supernova, because at least they have a neutrino mass loss, and which induce the center of mass velocity, so which is more than 10 kilometers per second. But basically, these systems have escape velocity larger than 10 kilometers per second. Probably it's fine, but not give very strong constraint. And this is abundance pattern compared to the solar abundance pattern for the reticulum 2. So this is abundance of the reticulum 2 minus solar abundance, solar R-process abundance. So it's fairly good agreement with these elements. But if you look at first peak or strontium on this element, light R-process element, it's quite low. It's even, it's quite low. So yeah, so this indicates some variation in the blue and the red ratio. And now I will talk something different. This is, so far I just focused on the stable R-process element, but also it's very interesting to see what is the radioactive element of the R-process in the ISM. So this is a kind of broke degeneracy between this line, because it's not just accumulate, but it's produced on decay, and produced on decay. So if it's a high rate and a low yield, you have this kind of abundance pattern in ISM. But if your event rate is rare, one event produces huge amount and then decay, and then next event happened and decay, something like this. And separation between this typical separation, time separation of two events can be calculated something like this. This is depends on the event rate in the Milky Way, and also this, you know, this how big is the volume of the merger ejecta depends on the, what the mixing efficiency, turbulent mixing in the ISM. So it depends on the efficiency and the turbulent velocity and the scale height of the galactic disk. But typically, if I take 10 million years, this is rate per 10 million year, like 10 events per million years, then the time separation is 300 million years at the solar or at some given point in the Milky Way. So this is one interesting measurement. This is look at the radioactive nuclei, I mean, the daughter of radioactive nuclei in the meteorite. So there are different kinds of interesting elements. First is long-lived elements. So we already a little bit discussed the thorium, which has 14 giga-year half-life, and the uranium has fairly long half-life. But there are elements that have short lifetimes, 10 million years, 81 million years, and it's quite heavy. So the meteorite abundance measurement shows something like this. Plutonium-244 is here, and then curium-47 is here. So basically, this short lifetime element depleted in the meteorite, which means these radioactive elements produced 100 million years before the solar system formed. So we think there was an RPOS element production 100 million years before the solar system formation. So this is already interesting because if you look at this time separation of 100 million years indicates some quite rare event. And also now there is interesting measurement. So they measure the plutonium abundance. This is live plutonium. In the deep sea, it's accumulated in a sea crust. And this is the measurements of the plutonium number, and then this is a expected value if this is stationary. And stationary means something like this constant. So the measurements shows some plutonium already decayed. And this indicates this time separation is sufficiently longer than 81 million years. And this shows that at least some plutonium was produced recently, within 300 million years, and this gives us some constraint on the event rate and the produced mass per event. So this is this range. So now we have fairly good agreement. This in order to explain the total RPOS element in a galaxy and dwarf galaxy. And this is a plutonium measurement, and they match quite very good location. And so that we think this event rate has very strong indication that of origin of the RPOS element. How much time do I have? 2 minutes? Okay. So this is yes, I will skip this. So I want to say something bit about the heating rate. So basically, many people use this heating formula that Brian shown in 2010. It's a very quite nice Q heating rate. It goes T to the minus 1.3. And but you have to be a bit careful because in order to get this heating rate, you need some condition. So I will explain this. What is the condition? So original Lipatinsky idea was Q is goes to 1 over T. Why they think so? Because D and DT goes like 1 over T. If you have a decay chain and then you see longer and longer lifetime, it's in the end you have D and DT is 1 over T. And if the decay energy doesn't depend the lifetime, then you get Q is 1 over T. But it's not really true because decay energy depends lifetime. So the lifetime of the decay, beta decay, we know that which proportional to the phase space of the electron and neutrino plus energy conservation. So the if electron is relativistic, So this is e to the 6 n plus delta function. So we have a lifetime goes to e to the minus 5. So if the decay energy is larger than electron mass. So in this case, your lifetime has this relation. So q goes like t to the minus 1.2. But if you go to the non-relativistic electron, then what you have is q goes to the minus 1.3. And it's, you have to do some correction because the Coulomb interaction changed your life, the relation, and in the end, q is goes to t to the minus 1.33. So this is quite nice, but the assumption is this many beta unstable nuclei in your ejecta. But if you go to light and lighter, then your number of the decay chain decreases, and then this assumption is no longer valid. In this assumption, then what you see is more some specific decay chain. Then your heating rate is no longer something that is universal. And Jonas showed that quite nice. This is electron fraction, and this is heating rate, and this is lanthanide fraction. So let's look at this figure. So if you go to the high YE, you suddenly, your lanthanide fraction decreases at some point. And at the same time, you lose, or there's some significant variation in the heating rate around the YE larger than 0.35. So in the high lanthanoid element, it's I agree that it's fair assumption that the heating rate is quite universal, but if you go to the lighter R-plus element, you have to be a bit careful. Okay, so this is one example. If I take just solar abundance, and this is including first peak, you have some bump here at the macronova timescale because this is for the first peak element, this chain completely dominates other heating. So this is mostly, and then mostly goes to the gamma rays, and the beta is here. And if I take just without a first peak, I get this one. So this is very close to the t to the minus 1.3. And I skip this. Yeah, this is summary. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Just a comment. In Gorelia 2011, we didn't use the universal power law. We used just what came from the decays.
I know. Sorry. Yeah. This is actually. These are the nucleus synthesis calculations, which indicate this power law profile.
Yeah, but we didn't use videos directly what came from the nuclear decay.
I know, yes.
This may be a naive question. Most of the short gamma ray bursts and also this double neutron star merger seem to be observed at the edge of galaxies or even outside of galaxies.
Right.
Does this have an impact on these kind of calculations?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, so here I assume just all merger occurs in the galaxy and contribute to the chemical evolution. But some fractions should escape. But so far we don't know how many fractions because we don't know much about the, pulsar far above, binary pulsars far above the galactic plane. Most of the pulsar is around the galactic plane. And the short GRB has some indicate, but the fraction of this huge offset is not so large. So it's, there's some uncertainties because of that.
So a related question, so the dwarf point and the Milky Way point assume the same fraction of our processes
exactly.
Retained in stars.
Yeah.
Are you afraid possible overproduction?
Yes, I'm afraid. I'm afraid. I wanted to say something this. So this is why I'm afraid, because European over Fe as a function of Fe over H, and this is goes metal rich environment, and you see this decline in the European over Fe, which means basically this this abundance is number of arbitrary event divided by that some, not exactly the number, but some combination of this quark collapse and type 1A. In order to explain this decline, so in this, this supposed to be quite a late phase of the galactic evolution. So one zone model is not so bad for describing this here. In order to explain this decline, you see gamma equal 2, which what gamma means is delay time distribution goes like t to the minus 2, which means most of the merger occurs very early time, very close to the minimum delay time. However, this event rate indicates that this event rate is for this delay time, 1 giga year to 10 giga year, which means if you go to this shorter delay time, in order to be consistent with the galactic evolution, you have much more merger at the early time. So which means you have too many merger events. So currently I don't have any good answer why this decline occurs. This decline is kind of very steep. And if you take, this is gamma equal 1 is usually we expect. So then you don't have you don't get the decline at all. You have just flat distribution in EU over FE.
So do you know how those data points are selected? Because I mean, when you get above an iron abundance of minus 2, you definitely have some contribution from the S process as well to the European abundance. So you need to take that out.
Right, but it's if S process contributes, it's opposite sense. If S process contributes, it goes up, right? So S process helps, but even though I just plot EU, then goes down. I don't know this, why this happens.
So they didn't subtract out an S process.
Right.
I think it's related to your assumption that you use solar abundance to derive total mass. But in earlier phase, it's related to Elliot's question. So European over iron is larger in average.
Yes, what I'm saying is because of the delay time, yeah, you have always some contribution of the Arpros neutron star merger from which formed before, yeah, long before. And this rate shape, I mean, this history is quite similar to type 1A. So it's quite strange that type 1A continue to contribute to the FE, but Arpros element seems to be not produced recently, but I don't have answer.
Any other question?
So I just wanted to follow up. You made the comment that reticulum 2 seemed to have a deficit, a substandard LIDAR process element.
Right.
And so that's a suggestion that the merger shouldn't make many or substandard production of the LIDAR process. If the lanthanide fraction is 0.01 and you're not making much LIDAR process, are you making anything else?
I don't know. Yes, I want to ask this question: how much lanthanide you can hide if you have lanthanide rich element in a low velocity ejector, that maybe you don't see bright signal from this kilonova event, but I'm not sure how much you can hide and what, because this 0.01 mass fraction is totally what we see, right? So yeah, I want to discuss the meaning, what does it mean, this mass fraction of 0.01.
Uh-huh. And if you hide it, does it lead to an overproduction problem?
It's related to the overproduction problem, but I generally want to know this, how much I can hide this.